Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello and welcome to the iOS show. My name's Roddy McCleary. I'll be your host in the absence of our more competent host, Paul Wheatley, who, following his marriage, is off on a honeymoon, I think, still. So good luck on your honeymoon. Have lots of fun, Paul. And don't you worry about this. It's the lunatics running the asylum for a couple of weeks. On the panel with me today on the iOS show, we have Ian Mackay. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, thanks, Roddy. How are you doing?
I'm just chipper, thank you. And also on the panel, we have Robert Falk, or Street Machine, as he likes to be known. How are you, Robert?
I am also quite fine, and I do hope that you have a pretty good day, Mr. McLean. Yeah, Mr. Roddy.
Yeah, just stick with the first name, it's probably easier.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got an action-packed show for you, I'm sure, since the tech, the iOS tech news is just... is like a massive volcano sending forth great hot jets of tech news since the launch of the iPhone 5. Or in other words, it's been completely dead since then. But we have been rummaging around in the undergrowth of the iOS world to find some news nuggets for you to chomp on. First of all, we'll just quickly go through our feedback since the last show. There's not been masses, but we did have, remember we were talking about running many or more than one iOS device from one iTunes account, on one instance of iTunes last time. And Graham Babbs got back to us and said that he runs numerous iOS devices all from one account. All the apps sync to all the devices, as do contacts and calendars. He says you can, however, set up individual diaries. Email can be separate, and Find My Phone on iCloud.com works a bit like Find My Friends, since you can see where all your devices are. Of course, the downside of that is, I suppose, if you did fire up one of those slightly more grown-up applications from the App Store with the Jiggly Ladies Bosoms one, then everyone else who shares the iTunes account is going to see them. And... yeah, that whole thing puts me off a bit. I'll stick to my own iTunes account.
I see how that could be a problem.
Your life is in the iOS apps approval team's hands.
Isn't it, though?
Yes.
Do they still have all those wobbly bosom apps? There seem to be a lot of them.
I'll leave it to you to research for next show, Roddy.
Well, there always, you always see this absolute cruft getting up to the top of the charts. And there was one I saw, and it was, sexy romance tips for partners, and it was positing itself as some kind of Kama Sutra with pictures and stuff, and from the reviews I think it had 3 stickmen diagrams or something. So I think people try and flirt with the rules and just try and make money with sort of cheap crap apps.
Well, that's definitely true, because I saw one sailing up this week, and I think the Apple removed it because they were stealing the address book and stuff.
Oh okay.
Yeah, so whoops.
I'm actually seeing a lot more now that I'm on iOS 6, and there's a lot more protection around sharing and privacy. It's it's reassuring to see that prompt come up all the time around, use of your contacts and use of your location.
It's good to know that the honeypot apps are not quite as, they don't just do their thing. You've got to approve them first.
Mm. But then you do have the problem of most people just blindly accept things anyway, don't they? You just press the S button.
Well, if they won't take a warning, that's their problem, I say.
Yeah, bah, you woeful sheep. You just press that button. So, moving on swiftly into the meat and potatoes, as it were, of our podcast. I don't know why I said that, because I'm vegetarian. Could it be
exactly what I had for dinner.
The enormous pile of tofu that is the news section. First up, we've got Tim Cook apologizes for the new Maps application. This news came actually just a day after our last podcast, I think. But I thought it was interesting to see, how Tim was going to deal with... well, it's not like they can bring something out without controversy now, is there? After, AntennaGate and what other ones have we had? I can't actually think of any now.
Something made by Apple Gate.
Anything by Apple.
Can I be the first to say, by the way, with a complete lack of sincerity, this would obviously never have happened under Steve Jobs.
And it would never have happened to Samsung either.
No.
Or if it had happened to Samsung, it wouldn't be in the news. Yeah, it's I read a really interesting thing when you compare Steve Jobs to Tim Cook. I can't find the link for it right now, but there was a comparison of Tim Cook's apology to, I think it was the AntennaGate one from Steve Jobs, and just the language they used and how they framed it. And it was, you know, you always think of Steve Jobs as being a sort of straight-talking man, but when they framed it one against the other, it really was Tim that was more, you know, friendly tone. He said that he was, you know, in fact, I can't remember what he said. I think he said... he was just from Apple rather than, you know, he was CEO. It was just more personable and just more, you know, he straight away said what they were going to do about it. You know, he was upfront about the problem and said, we are going to fix this. And, you know, here are alternatives if you want to use them. Whereas Steve Jobs waxed on and on and on for ages about, you know, very obliquely about how there might be a problem and then said, hey, you can have a free bumper.
Yeah, I think he took it a lot more personally, Steve Jobs, that is.
Actually, you know, I've remembered as well, Robert, it wasn't the AntennaGate, it was when they dropped the price of the first iPhone within a couple of months.
All right, yeah.
And that's the other little scandal there was around the iPhone, wasn't there? Yeah.
So it was kind of weird at the time, but yeah.
So it's interesting to see Tim Cook very upfront, you know, apologising. I just... obviously, it's been seized on by a lot of the usual. So, have Business Insider written anything about this?
Have they not? they always write something negative about Apple on like what daily basis now.
But as you said, it is, you know, this wouldn't have happened under Steve, and which syncs quite nicely to the anniversary of Steve Jobs' death, which was commemorated on the Apple front page. Just
well, before we move on to that, Roddy, I mean, how did you guys feel about Tim coming out and apologizing?
I don't think he came out.
Do you think he needed to? Do you think it was a good idea? Do we think that his apology hit the spot? And do you think people are kind of, you know, are they feeling better about the fact that Apple's come out and said sorry, or are they still annoyed?
Well, it has kind of quietened down very quickly, hasn't it? So maybe he's hit the mark.
It could be, but I think that. It was kind of an exaggeration in some ways. I'm not saying in all ways, but in some ways, it was like the journalist, tech journalist, just jumping on the target, like pouncing like a cat on a mouse. And wow, that's easy to write about.
It's a high visibility target, isn't it? So
yeah, I think the general public didn't have as big a problem as they thought they would have with it. So it kind of started to blow over now.
Although actually having maybe... said last time that I didn't have so many problems with maps, you know, I noticed a few little things wrong. I think I'm going to have to stop using it because the more I try and use maps.app, it is crazy wrong.
Ah, okay.
Well, since the last show, I upgraded my iPad to iOS 6, and the first thing I did was go into maps and look around at all the places near my house, and I just... everything is wrong.
It really is, isn't it?
Like there's a particular restaurant I like to go to here in Edinburgh, which is a Tex-Mex burrito place called Illegal Jack's, and it is currently located a little bit further down the road, and it's located in the wrong place, but what is in the location that it should be, Illegal Jack's, is in fact a lap dancing club, which is not where it should be.
Oh dear.
That's a bit of an oops.
Yes, well, I mean, if he gets more business out of it, then great. But yes, maybe not the kind of business he wants.
To play the devil's advocate, you can't move for lap dancing bars around there. But yeah, that's not great. I was out a few days ago, and I did notice that looking at the location, the actual points of interest were all in the right place in that area relative to each other, but not against the map. So you could see, you know, all the restaurants and bars on one street were about half a block away, but they were all in the right position against each other. So it's almost like that area just hadn't scaled properly.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of stuff that's just like on the wrong side of the road from where it should be. It's kind of weird.
Do you think either, the world has shrunk? They do say the world's getting smaller. They do. That's a thing that people actually say. Or, you know, they did say, and I thought this was really cool from a science point of view, that when the Japanese tsunami and earthquake, was that last year, that the world had shifted like 10 meters or something and that all the GPS coordinates around there were wrong. I'm clutching at straws here, but it was cool anyway.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, they're such perfectionists, they would have taken that into account when they were doing the mapping, of course. I get frustrated because obviously one of the things you can do when you look at something on a map is you can do the little you show me the information about this thing, and then you can report a problem. But I haven't tried doing that yet, because I look at all these things and go, I have to report problems for 17 of these things on my road alone. You know,
I started doing a few of them, and it actually has a nice little method of either reporting them. You know, it has options, little menus that you go through, and it says, you know, this is wrong. Why is it wrong? It's in the wrong place, or it's closed. And if it's in the wrong place, it lets you move the pin. Which is nice, but I've got to the point where I was, you know, dutifully fixing things, and now I just think, sod it, I'm going to fire up Google Maps on my browser instead.
See, because they announced that they'd be asking Apple Store staff to look at the accuracy of things. So obviously, us here in Edinburgh, we're completely out of luck because we still don't have one of them. But you know, given that Apple has lots and lots of money, I think it wouldn't be their style at all. But it'd be kind of cool if they offered bounties for people submitting correct information or something like that.
What, delicious coconut chocolate bars?
Those two, yes, I would take one of them in a heartbeat.
Oh, the dark chocolate ones as well.
They're pretty good,
and there's two bits as well. So you could share it with the genius that had given it to you, while laughing like children and ruffling each other's hair.
Yes,
that's just a suggestion.
That would be quite a good way for them to improve the data further. If there was actually some reason for you to go through and improve information,
you could get tiny little credits towards stuff from the App Store, so that cumulatively after you've done quite a few edits,
0.37 pence off that new MacBook I've been looking at.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I sort of meant the App Store rather than the Apple Store, because that would, you know, you could have, you know, do 50 edits and you get a 99p app or something. Apple could sacrifice their cuts.
Sorry,
have an email to write to Tim Cook. This is good stuff.
Well, you just made me angry by mentioning the App Store there, because I've tried that on iOS 6 and it's not good. It's not good.
I see where they've gone with it. It's prettier, but it's less functional.
It's harder to use. You have to scroll in several different directions to get anything done. And why?
Yeah, I know my iPhone 4, that scrolling is slow as well.
It really surprised me when I tried it for the first time. I don't know if I didn't read it properly enough, like what they would do in the update, but the card view and all that stuff, it's just like, whoa, what's this? Kind of threw me off when I was looking for one app, and
and it makes for a lot of wasted space compared to the old view.
Definitely.
Well, we should write all this down and send it all to Tim Cook, wrapped around a brick thrown through a window at one infinite loop.
I think that can be arranged.
It's the only way these people listen.
Yeah, well, we could wait until they finish their new spaceship building, and then when we throw it through the window, it'll be the only window we're throwing it through.
We'll be wrecking the whole building.
I like your thinking. Now, can I talk about Steve Jobs being dead now?
But please be my guest.
I wanted to, and you just.
I'll take a minute of silence while you talk.
is this like these times when I'm at work and I'm talking and no one else is talking, and then I realise I've just talked through an entire minute of silence for September the 11th or something?
Yeah, but you've got to do things in your own way. You know, you're remembering them by blethering.
doing them loudly and brashly and with scant regard for anyone else.
Pretty much.
Well, on that note, I'm going to talk about Steve Jobs being dead. Steve Jobs is dead. If you heard the news from a year ago, there was a touching memorial on Apple.com. I don't know if it's still up, actually, but it was a sort of two-minute little rolling tribute. It was very sweet, I thought. And nice they haven't forgotten the old guy, as it were.
Also, I'm very happy that they remembered his little prank when he pranked called Starbucks when they unveiled the iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
That was nice.
That was a beauty. And I think if we're talking about Steve Jobs being dead, you know, it takes us back almost to what has changed. You know, as you were saying, has there been any marked change in... We've talked about Tim Cook and how he's handled the... Are we calling it Mapgate or something?
Anything gate.
But I mean, I noticed somebody pointed out that when Steve Jobs died a year ago, the Apple share price was at 300 and something, and now it's double that.
So that's, you know, good, right?
Evidently, there's still momentum and they're still doing things right, just not the maps.
And I mean, we've talked quite a lot this year about how leaky the supply chain has become in terms of things coming out before they're actually announced. And, you know, Tim Cook obviously said he's going to be doubling down on secrecy some time ago. Apparently that doesn't apply to supply chain. So I've concluded that it's because they were scared of Steve Jobs, but not of Tim Cook.
Do you think he should just parade around in meetings with their suppliers wearing a scary mask and brandishing a machete. Is that what you're saying?
That's one option.
Far be it from me to dictate his style of business.
A very well-designed machete.
I think it would be beautiful, polycarbonate.
It wouldn't do anything. Johnny Ive on it. Great. He'll fix it.
Okay, shall we move on to our next, since we're talking about supply chain?
Well, no, as we're talking about polycarbonate.
Are you stopping me from moving on to another link?
No, no, as we're talking about polycarbonate, there are rumours that Apple may be making something out of carbon fibre.
A pair of shoes.
I don't think it's that, no.
A big egg that Johnny Ive will live in.
How do you know he doesn't already have one of those?
Well, I don't know, but maybe he needs a second one. Go on, yes. Tell us, what's the thing they're making out of carbon
nobody
fiber?
Knows. This is the thing. I don't think it's a mystery thing.
I
don't think it's going to be anything we're going to see this year, unlike, say, the rumoured mini iPad.
It's probably, you know, like the toilet bowls for the new headquarters or something. Could withstand even the most potent projectiles.
That's as maybe, but they'll be testing them in a certain way so they can use them in some other thing, because that's what they do.
And I think I may have read the same article as you, Ian, because it said that carbon fibre, as well as being particularly strong, is a much better substance to transfer radio waves through for
it's completely radio transparent, unlike those horrible metals with all those electrons in them.
But doesn't that mean that all our future Apple mobile devices are going to look like the car mirrors of kids driving sort of tiny little cars with four exhausts?
Well, if Apple kind of maintains its fondness for shiny stuff, then it's very possible, yes.
And I think that brings us nicely onto the thing that I almost brought us nicely onto a minute ago before we nicely segued on something else, which we've come back from, which is, where is the iPad mini? There had been lots of rumours saying that it was going to come in October. There were lots of rumours saying
that... Is it in your pants?
It could be. I could be wearing it like a strange sporran, Ian. And it would be just the right size, wouldn't it, to fit in a sporran if you're a technology mad Scotsman like
That's
us.
True.
Well, me. So, yeah, the iPad mini has yet to materialise. There was a little bit of chatter going on, which I misinterpreted. You pointed out, Robert, that there are no invitations out for a special iPad mini event. I nearly put in the show notes that there was one, which would be wrong. I'm hearing rumours that there are component suppliers saying that Apple has ordered parts for 10 million iPad minis in the fourth quarter of this year. It is the fourth quarter of this year, and I suppose if it is coming out, it's running out of time.
Well, if they want to get the big Christmas shopping, then they are really, really running out of time, yeah.
And you'd imagine they would, wouldn't you?
But they have been out. Sorry, carry on.
Apple would not miss a huge opportunity like this. They know how to plan. I mean, crying out loud, Tim Cook's running the place.
But then they usually don't ship things until they're ready, do they?
This is true. Okay, I'm gonna throw in another numbersy thing. Sorry, guys.
I thought we were gonna get away with no numbers this time.
But there was a very interesting thing on the Asimco blog last week,
Horace Dedieu.
That's right, yes. Yeah. And basically he said that Apple spends lots of money. They have lots of capital expenditure on machinery, and you can see this in the accounts. And then the following quarter, they ship lots and lots of stuff because they've made the stuff with the machinery they've just bought.
Okay.
And in the last quarter, they spent like 2.5 times as much as they've ever spent in a quarter on machinery. So it's extremely likely that in the next quarter, which is the current quarter, they are planning to ship lots and lots of stuff with of these things that the machinery will be building.
But part of it could be that it's just scale, that they're building more of their existing things and they're having to put more of the same tooling into new factories or existing factories to build more iPhones than they do at the moment, rather than necessarily new things.
It absolutely could be, Roddy, but equally, you know, it could be a mix of scale and new stuff. We just don't know. But the fact is that it looks like, from their accounts, they are planning to build lots and lots of things. And we don't know what those things are yet, necessarily. We don't know what mix of things it is.
Yeah, but we want them. We want them now.
Absolutely.
We want them yesterday.
There's also stuff, you know, the other rumor that's doing the rounds, not quite iOS related, is a smaller Retina MacBook that they're maybe going to be doing.
They
need machining for that, but the volumes on MacBooks are nothing like as much as they are on iOS devices, so it's much more likely to be an iOS device they're installing capacity for.
I just want my new iMac. As a friend of mine asked me today, I think someone he knows wanted to buy an iMac, and he keeps texting me saying, you know, Roddy, is it a good time to buy an iMac? Do you know when the next one's coming out? And again, I had to say today, no, you have to wait. It's not time. And I looked up a Mac Rumors buyer's guide, and it, you know, the usual turnaround between iMac generations is about 200 odd days. And at the moment, it's well up in the 500s. I think it's the longest it's ever been. So,
wow.
It's interesting we were talking about the transition to Tim Cook, if you could call it a transition when somebody's just died. But there are a lot of things that do seem to be taking a while. iMac's taking ages. There have been when I was looking through that buyer's guide, a lot of things haven't been refreshed.
I suppose it could be that they're waiting for some better technology just around the corner.
I guess Retina is a lot of that, isn't it?
That's what I was thinking. I think that they're on the cusp of a lot of really interesting stuff, but, you know, Retina's tough to make, 4G chips are tough to make, you know, smaller. They've made everything much thinner and lighter in the current generation as well, and that means it's harder to make as well. I mean, if you look at the iPhone 5, it's ridiculously well put together, and building something like that, I think I said this 2 weeks ago, but building something like that in the volume they're building it must be incredibly hard to do. So, you know, I don't know what the capacity is, you know, how many they make versus how many they actually ship, how many they have to waste because they're not done right. But yeah, there must be quite a few.
If they want an engineering challenge, they could try making me thinner and lighter. That's just impossible, really, isn't it?
If you were made of aluminium, you might have a chance there.
I think my
aluminium, so yeah.
Okay, shall we?
Have you considered an aluminium shell?
I can't say I have. I was going to go for polycarbonate or carbon fiber, but you've totally changed my mind. I could be laser cut from one solid piece of aluminium. And I'd look great in a suit.
That
would be nice.
Right, so moving on again. Our next news item is that a Microsoft manager for, I think it was Hungary, has said that Office for iOS and Android is supposedly confirmed and is due in March 2013. Have you any thoughts on that, guys?
It's probably only the Hungarian version which takes longest because it's a really difficult language to translate for.
And it's full of sausages.
Yeah, it's just like lots of eels in his
autograph. I don't know anything about Hungarians. Do they eat loads of sausage? I don't know.
I think you're thinking of goulash.
I'm exactly thinking of goulash. Goulash, sausage, it's the same word, basically. But it's interesting. I mean, the photographs I've seen of Office for the thing that was called Metro for Windows 8 that is now not called Metro because something else is called Metro. So the new mobile user interface for Windows 8. Office was pretty awful on that, by the looks of it.
Wasn't that just a regular version? But
well, they have sort of some of the bits have Metro covers and sort of like a shell around them, but it's not had a great reception so far because it's just touch-friendly.
The Windows and Office teams at Microsoft don't really play very well together. Mm. They're quite competitive, and there's all sorts of politics around this. I mean, I read an article a couple of years ago that somebody who was at Microsoft at the time said, we were on the Windows team, and we did all this work preparing for a touchscreen interface, and we went to the Office team, and they went, oh, we're not making Office touchscreen compatible. We've got no interest in doing that. And they were like, but Windows could be touchscreen compatible if you just do your bit. And they were like, well, why would we? You know, we're fine.
Everything is just fine.
Yeah, and you know, they had so much kind of possibility that the internal politics just kind of, you know, crashed on the rocks.
I was hoping you were going to do a sound effect there, Ian, for crashing on the rocks.
Oh, I've crashed.
Wow, it's pretty action-packed stuff today, isn't it? So, any benefit to that? I mean, I suppose it's great that for me, if I'm having to deal with Office things from my actual office, then everything's in, you know, Excel and Word. It'd be nice to have, you know, if it's a really good viewer would be great, but I don't really particularly think I want to touch any big spreadsheets, even with my iPad.
Can you imagine?
No.
PowerPoint on it.
You see, one thing I do like about their approach to numbers and pages on iOS is that Apple have genuinely simplified the interface. You can actually do quite a lot by stripping out features and making it really basic. You know, if you're creating a spreadsheet on the fly, if you're, you know, trying to work out something too complicated for just calculator, when you're on the move, then numbers is great. You can rattle off a really simple table and put things together and do some calcs, and it's easy. But, you know, anything more complicated than that, you want to be sitting at a proper computer running a proper spreadsheet. And I think Apple have nailed it. They're not trying to do everything through a touch interface, but I've got a bad feeling that's what Microsoft are going to try and do.
That could very well be that.
More power to them, I guess. But, you know, I wouldn't expect to see it. I mean, the one thing that I think there's a good chance it will now be coming out on iOS and Android, because they've got the Windows 8 stuff sorted now, and they won't be bringing it out first for somebody else's platform anymore.
Perfect sense, yeah.
But obviously there's a big market there, so they'd be daft to ignore it. But if they can say, well, we had it on touchscreen on our devices first, but hey, everyone else, you can have it now, that kind of seems to be a bit more Microsofty.
That would make more sense.
Shall we move on?
Let's.
We're having skirted around Office. We are now going back to Apple products and looking at an interesting news story from MarketWatch.com that Passbook, which is pretty new, now accounts for 12% of Major League Baseball's e-ticket sales. MLB is baseball, not basketball, isn't it?
It is, yes.
It is, right. I have no idea.
So, basketball is NBA.
Well, that's also some letters. So that's pretty interesting. I mean, we were saying last week, Passbook looks great. It's interesting. Where are all the passes? And they're obviously really out there for Major League Baseball. 12%. I'm assuming, you know, they have a lot of people going to these baseball games. It's as far as I know, an incredibly popular sport in the States. And so 12% must be huge.
It should be.
Although that's only of e-tickets, isn't it, rather than all ticket sales?
Yes, yes. Mm. But it's interesting because MLB have an app called At Bat, which is a really, really clever and well-developed app in the States. And what it does is it lets you kind of follow the game live, and you can choose which camera you're following and all the rest of it. And you can be much more involved. And it just pops up stats on your screen as you're watching. And it's become very, very popular on iOS. So I think there's probably quite a lot of crossover between people that use the At-Bat app and people that buy these e-tickets, because they, you know, I think for some people who are really into their baseball, the At-Bat app is good enough that they would buy an iOS device for it if they see it on a friend's kind of thing. So I see this as a kind of natural progression of MLB's very iOS-friendly strategy.
Was it baseball that they used as the example in both the iOS 6 preview and the keynote recently for Siri integration, where Siri was able to compare players and things like that?
I think it was baseball. Yeah,
it was like, you know, how much taller than player one is player two, and
yes, what's the batting average and who won that game last night and all this kind of stuff.
Can you imagine if they expanded that to other things, like what is Fern Cotton's inside leg measurement and that kind of thing? The mind boggles.
Truly does.
And moving very swiftly on from that. Well, actually, if we pause for a second, is there anything in Britain, Ian, that maybe we could see that kind of take up on?
Well, yes, but I think you know, Premier League, there's not so much stats in there as you know, all the American sports are very stats heavy. The commentators are very big on their stats, and you know, you can go to the various websites and look up any stat you like, pretty much. But I would think the Premier League could probably do something pretty impressive.
Well, people get very into that, don't they? But they're the more sort of football geeks. But whereas if you had an actual pass, then you could potentially see really high uptake on that.
Indeed, but the thing I don't know is how they deal with sales in this country, and whether or not it would have to be like a Manchester City app that sells you a ticket and a Newcastle United app that sells you a ticket, or whether FIFA or could just have an app that does all the tickets for you. I don't know. And again, like I say, because MLB had this At-Bat app that had such high uptake, I think this was an easier move for them. But I think
it was almost there anyway. It was just
And I mean, there's much more involvement by the governing bodies in stuff like this in the States. I think in the UK it tends to be more club focused than kind of governing body focused with marketing activity.
Fascinating. Moving on. Finally. 40% apparently of US teens use an iPhone. Ian,
that's
very impressive. Do you want to talk about numbers for a minute?
I can't get them to stop using my iPhone. It's really annoying.
what is 40% as a percentage, Ian?
That's quite high.
Is it 40?
I, It is. Okay. It's like two-fifths.
Okay. That is a lot, though, isn't it?
4 and 10.
I know both of my kids, I mean, they're 9 and... I don't even know how old they are. They're 9 and 10, and they've both got 3GSs, and it's crazy. I'm not entirely sure I approve of what my own children are doing, and I'm their father.
Well, that's to be expected, I guess.
Do you think a lot of this is the hand-me-down effect?
Because yes, I was about to say, I mean, what you said there about your kids having 3GSs, obviously, you know, you and your various partners, Ruddy, have had iPhones at various times.
I don't know what you mean.
and so your kids have done quite well out of that, probably, in terms of available second-hand iPhones. You know, it's, what is it now? It's 5 years since the first iPhone, so... Yeah. You know, there are going to be an awful lot of secondhand ones out there. The challenge will be, you know, there's nothing in that survey about what kind of iPhone they're using. So are they using 3Gs, 3GSs? Are they using original iPhones? How many of them are getting brand new iPhones bought
for them? Exactly, yeah, it could be an older one, couldn't it? It's interestingly, the way that the hand-me-down effect's gone through my family, and by that I mean extended family and grandparents and stuff like that, I've got 2 first-gen iPhones sitting right in front of me now that have actually come out the back end of all of this they're actually just completely surplus now. You know, after 5 years, I suppose we could give them to a tramp.
They're kind of like gone full circle.
They really come back to you. Maybe, and now maybe they're just retro, so I should start using them and get rid of my iPhone.
Do they run iOS 3 best?
3.13, I think, yeah. When you say best, do they run it best? They run it.
No, I mean, is that the best thing they can run?
It's the newest thing they can run. Whether it's the best for them is... I'd have to ask them.
At least they don't have to suffer iOS 4, like the poor 3Gs.
Hello, old first-gen iPhone. Is 3.13 the best for you? Oh, no, don't put me back in the box. Oh, well, that's all it's got to say.
Silence. That was kind of depressing.
depressing is that 40% of US teens have an iPhone.
How is that in Britain, by the way? Is the BlackBerry still big, or how is it?
It seems to be. One of my kids said that they wanted a BlackBerry instead of their iPhone, and I just gave them this look. Son of mine. It does seem to have caught on, though. I mean, really big time, because I suppose there's a lot of availability of BlackBerry for cheap.
Yeah, but that's the bit that's missing from the survey. I want to know what they're using, the other people are using that isn't an iPhone. Have they got Androids? Have they got BlackBerries? What are they using? Do they want iPhones? Do they want Androids? You know, what's the other half of the market using?
Well, I suppose despite BlackBerry's, RIM's faltering success, BlackBerry Messenger is huge still.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is it's quite hard in the States to get a phone without a contract, so... you know, the actual price of the phone kind of pales in comparison to the price of a contract usually. Mm-hmm. Once a phone is secondhand, you know, you're going to get a contract anyway with a phone, so why not just get an iPhone because it's the same price? And that, you know, overall they were saying that iPhone ownership is kind of, is it iPhone new activations as a proportion of the market is over 50% in the States now? So,
living egg.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's quite a few then.
Well, and Android just isn't quite as popular in the States. I mean, the US, because the pricing model is quite different, because the difference in price between an Android phone and an iPhone over there is very little compared to over here. You know, we get free Androids with our contracts in the UK, but you know, you can get the 3GS for free now on a contract, but that's about it.
Mm.
So.
I do see a lot of adverts. In fact, as a Virgin Media customer for my internet and telly here, they delight in sending me several times a month, several times a day, I think sometimes, dear householder envelope, massive envelopes, A4 ones as well, trying to get me on a contract with a free BlackBerry for a sort of £7 a month contract. And I wonder if some parents are taking out an extra little contract so they can get a BlackBerry for their kids to shut them up.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible.
It's quite many things are possible, Ian. What have we got next? We've got the US teens. I'm casting my eye over our fantastically well padded out show notes here. This one I caught today. The Lightning connector authentication has been cracked, and again, reportedly in brackets, because this is all alleged, but it's interesting. There had been a delay, I think, on Apple getting the program moving to have third-party people producing accessories. And yeah, this will, if a company in China has reportedly cracked the authentication and now could just make their own stuff. Thoughts on that, gentlemen?
Hooray!
Yay!
Very fast work, I must say.
Well, I mean, it opens the door to things like unofficial docs, because Apple have come out, despite having had references to it in the initial launch documentation, they've come out and said, we're not going to make a dock for the iPhone 5. And I quite like having a dock. I plug my phone into a dock every night, so it charges overnight and it stands up and I can see it. So, yeah, I want a dock if I end up buying an iPhone 5.
Do you know, I used to love using a dock and just have, I used to have two. I'd have one for work and one for at home. And I loved just plonking it in and it sat there and it looked good. And it was charging and it was syncing and everything was happy. But since bumpers, I just stopped using it, because I had an iPhone 4 dock, but I'd have to take the bumper off to put it in the dock. And so I just stopped using it.
Well, actually, I did the opposite. I stopped using the bumper because I wanted to use the dock.
Oh, I thought you'd put your dock in the bumper and just had your phone rattling around.
No, I need a bumper for my dock.
And I take it that, this may be a silly question, no bumpers or official case for the iPhone 5?
Certainly doesn't look that way. I mean, they got into the bumper market, I think, because they...
Well, they had to. Really?
Well, no, but they had it before they had to. That was the thing. I mean, I think they saw the amazing third-party market and thought, we can make a good case, we can make a bit of extra money through it. And then they had the thing where AntennaGate hit, and all of a sudden you got free bumpers, and everyone started thinking, well, oh, I need a bumper so that my phone will work. And I think at that point they went, never again.
I was sort of thinking even pre-AntennaGate, because I think, you know, the glass front and back is, you could tell when you first held an iPhone 4 that it was really quite a fragile thing. And the bumper is a pretty good way of, it's a surprisingly good way of protecting the glass, actually, for little drops rather than hurling at a brick wall. But I wonder if that's just what they thought. They came out with a very pretty design, but one that wasn't very resilient.
Maybe, yeah.
And they wanted to give it bouncy powers with
a bumper. Even so, even if the next iPhone is made out of, like, I don't know, easily breakable spaghetti sticks or something, I still don't think we'll see another case from them.
Okay. But it's... It's a shame, obviously, because the iPhone 5 looks great, but it also looks like it could get very scratched, and I guess maybe they're just relying on third parties now.
Could be, yeah.
I think third parties are never going to stop making cases, so I guess Apple's like, well, if you want one, you can buy one. If you don't, you don't.
But they were nearly going to stop making docks and things until they crack the authentication.
Well, yeah, but that's a different issue, really, I guess. You know, the only reason you can't make a dock is because you can't make the Lightning connector work. And if you can, then you can make docks. So yeah, you don't need any special skills to make a case. You just need a ruler in a manufacturing plant in China.
Oh, I know it's a different thing, but there was an opportunity for a link there. And it's all about the links, Ian, as Paul continually tells me. But today, viewers, you're just going to have to put up with the rather iffy links of also-ran presenter Roddy McCleary. Gentlemen, what else have we got in our news? We've got Meg Whitman, the CEO of HP, saying there'll be no HP smartphone in 2013.
That's like not even news. That's like saying we don't have news.
There was no HP smartphone in 2012 either, was there?
No.
I'm aware of. So, and their tablets have certainly gone up the...
I suppose what she did say was, we need to be in this market. And everyone kind of turned around and went, you were in this market. You got out of this market. What the hell are you talking about?
I thought they were... I really liked the part, you know, the Palm WebOS stuff they put together.
The Pre.
I thought they were great little phones. And I knew people that had them, and I would play with them and think WebOS was really nice, and they just killed it with the... So when Leo Apotheker came in, wasn't it? And they killed it with the HP touchpad about 2 weeks after it came out. And I thought that was going to be a really big contender for the iPad as well. I think HP had the ability to produce in volume, and I thought, because I was so hung up on
it. They were clearly the best placed competitor for the iPad at that point, but they just didn't want to follow through. And I think they kind of got scared and went, Apple's a juggernaut and they're crushing us in, you know, they're growing in PCs and our market share's going down and how can we compete? And, well, maybe. But
and Leo Apotheker says, let's go to consultancy instead.
Yeah, but he was never the right man for the job, and he was always more interested in software and stuff. But, you know, it's kind of beside the point.
What do you think he is the right man for?
Well, I think he was fired for incompetency from his previous job, and then HP thought, him, yeah, he is the guy who we want for CEO.
That's a better question. If he's been fired once from there, we could have a competition, the best thing that Leo Apotheker could be fired out of a cannon at.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, so actually, yeah.
Any of our listeners have any good ideas on what Leo Apotheker, former CEO of HP, could be fired out of a theatrically large cannon at, then please write in.
Yeah, do it. We'd love to hear.
We've got another tiny little Malteser-sized nugget of news that you can now apparently set your default iCloud email address to @icloud.com. Previous options included @mac.com, @me.com, and were there any other switches too, weren't there? So now you can send it from @icloud.com and then from
I am literally perspiring at this excitement.
I think you're
going to
feel silly when they change the name again, aren't they?
I've never used my Mac stroke me stroke iCloud address for anything except, yeah, like Apple related services.
But you sort of had to for, yeah, as you say, for Apple related stuff. For
and I don't even have, I had a me.com address. And then when I got iOS 5, I kind of used my Apple ID that wasn't my me.com address. Yeah. And now I can't use that one anymore. And I'm very confused.
And I did exactly the same as you, that I went over to my Apple ID, which was my actual email address, I think. And which I now use as my iCloud one. But because I made that change, I've now lost, and this is a really nice link, lost my 25 gigabyte. You know, everyone got, who had a Mobile Me account already, would get 25 gig of free iCloud storage. I think it might have been if you were a paid member. And I got that, but then, of course, I changed to my other iCloud, which only has 5 gig. And they've just announced that people will be getting another year. If you've got 25 gig already as the free gratis one, you'll get that for another year. And that's great.
Yeah, I'm in exactly the same position. I have no use for this extra 25 gig, even though I have it on this account that I never use anymore. It's thrilling. And I mean, there were lots of questions back at the time. Will we be able to merge our accounts? And they kind of eventually came out and said no.
But they sounded like they were going to, didn't they? There was this sort of...
I think they said, oh, yeah, we're thinking about it. Yeah. And then they were like,
we're thinking about not doing it. Do you know one thing I noticed is there must have been a prelude to the year extension. Somebody said they looked at their iCloud settings and they had 25 gig for another 18 years, I think. And it must have been a little blip when they were moving them all to the extra year.
Bargain. I think I saw that from Fraser Spears or something like that.
Was it Fraser Spears? Okay.
I think he did, and a few others too.
We'll come back to Fraser Spears very soon. So Fraser Spears, if you're listening, you're all over this podcast, man.
Shall we move on?
Okay. The next thing we have is that the iPod Touch is now shipping and has 512 megabytes of RAM.
I'm kind of torn. I thought I might get an iPhone 5, and now I'm thinking maybe I want one of these new iPod Touches, because previously the iPod Touch was never as good as the iPod as the iPhone in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. But this time they have the same screen, and you know the camera is much better. And for the first time, I think it's a device that is almost without compromise. The chip is slower, but if you're not doing too much with it seems like quite a nice device.
They have the same screen. They dream the same dream, as Belinda Carlisle would sing if she was on this podcast.
Exactly so.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, and the Nano's out as well. Do we have any thoughts on the Nano? We covered it a bit last time, didn't we?
It's weird.
It's kind of weird. Like the old Nano was weird as well.
Yeah, it's neither fish nor fowl.
It's just strange.
I'd be a bit worried if I went in and paid good, hard-earned money for an iPod Nano and I came back with a fish.
That would be kind of a disappointment. I see how that would happen, yeah.
I thought being Scandinavian, you'd be delighted if it was a fish.
I kind of like fish, I must admit.
And it's not a hen either.
No.
So that's all we've got to say about the iPod Nano. It's a comprehensive review there. We do have, if you are particularly interested in the hardware aspect of either of them, there are links to reviews on our show notes. One more thing we have here is the Purple Haze. It's our little Jimi Hendrix segment. There have been reports of purple hazing on the iPhone 5 camera.
Apparently,
like so many other cameras.
When you point it at a source of light, then the light does weird things and bounces around inside the lens and makes things go purple. And then there were subsequently reports of Android cameras that do the same thing. It's like it's a common problem.
It's almost like AntennaGate when they then pointed out all these other phones that do exactly the same thing and have it. It's not news, is it?
It's like the opposite of news. You know, it's not a camera. It's a phone with a camera, and the camera on the phone might be quite good, but it's you still have physics getting in your way. It's a tiny little thing, and there's only so much they can do to improve the performance of the camera in adverse conditions.
Curse you, physics!
Yeah, suck it up. Physics is going to get you.
I have to say, though, I've not got my iPhone 5 yet, but when I do, it could be a bit weird, because I had eye surgery earlier in the year, and it gives me sort of purple haze, glary things as the light bounces around my eyes. So if I was looking through my eyes, through the iPhone that had the haze as well, it would be like some kind of 60s-style freakout.
Wow. Trippy.
I look forward to it.
Groovy, baby. Okay, shall we? That's the news. So let's put the news in our special news box under our news table and throw ourselves headlong into the mysterious, freaky world of the Trouble Gusset. We've got a couple of nuggets in here today. The first one is from Graham Babbs, who we had our feedback from earlier and who we are not paying. Graham Babbs said via email that he set up 10 iPads for a school at home. I don't think he means the school is at his home. There were 10 iPads for a school, which he set up at his home on their behalf. He logged
Thank you for that clarification, Roddy. Well, that was a very important clarification. Anything, I'm sure nobody ambiguity. Could have misconstrued what you were saying.
Well, I misconstrued it as I was saying it, because there's no connection between my brain and my mouth.
That is very true.
He plugged in each iPad one at a time. He logged out his Apple ID from iTunes, and this is a salient point. He then logged in with the school's Apple ID, and when syncing these iPads, all his apps and music were synchronized to the iPads, and he wondered if that should really happen.
Well, if he was logged in.
But he'd logged out his Apple ID and used their Apple ID. So
iTunes doesn't really care. That's the thing. If you're syncing with iTunes, that is, the library is mostly independent of the of the Apple ID.
Yeah.
I had this the other day. I had somebody who's just upgraded from an iPhone 3G to an iPhone 4S, and they didn't have their contacts backed up to iCloud. So I said, oh, don't worry, I'll sort that out for you. So I plugged both phones into my Mac in turn, and I synced the contacts across, and then I synced the contacts back from the Mac to the new phone. But when I was doing that, it was like, oh, do you want to put all these new apps on? And I was like, no, they're not their apps. They're my apps. They can't have them. But it still wanted to sync them across, so I had to tell it no.
Did you tell it no?
I did.
And did it stop?
I just unticked the box and it didn't try.
Okay, cool. I wonder if there'd be problems if it has synced all the apps, if they would actually work. That's
they
one thing
should,
he didn't say. Do you think they would work? One thing that might also do is that if they were then synced to another iTunes library, it would probably wipe them all, wouldn't it?
That it would get very confusing.
Yeah. So I just hope if this is for a school that he's taken off his Wobbling Ladies Bosoms apps off before he transferred.
I have a feeling we'll hear about it in the press. And
I think we probably will. Okay. There was, and I did promise another link to the redoubtable Fraser Spears. I asked him very quickly because he is well known for having introduced iPads at a school that he's the sort of IT guy for. It's a school in the west of Scotland, and he really kicked off very early after the launch of iPads by introducing them to this school. And he's been documenting, I think maybe on his blog, but I've been reading on Twitter, you know, what's worked for him, what obstacles have been in the way. It's been very successful. But he said, I forgot what it's called now, I should have written this down. I asked him what the application was that he uses to synchronize all the iPads. And he said, I'm scrolling frantically, it's the Apple Configurator. So there is a proper configurator application for doing multiple iPads. I even think if you order... Sure, I read that if you're a school or, you know, an educational organization and you buy lots of iPads, that you can also get... it's like a docking, multiple docking rack from Apple.
Yes, that's kind of cool. I'm not sure if Apple make it, but you can actually see them if you go to the online Apple store. You can see these cabinets that you can like put lots of iPads into. They do one for like 20 iPads and one for like 30 iPads.
I thought that was kind of
cool. You can roll them around and charge them, and it's very exciting.
What you should make is a thing that is like a sort of bifurcated stick with lots of cloths on, so you can give them all a wipe at the same time.
Is that not like a blind cleaner thing?
I've no idea.
Don't you have blinds?
Oh, well.
I'm going to go and patent it.
Right. Off you go. The answer for Graham is use this tool that you've just said the name
use
of.
Use the Apple configurator, and I'm assuming it's downloadable.
Well, I could be wrong, but I think it might be one of these things that you get with OS X server.
Okay.
I think it actually is in the Mac App Store, if I don't remember wrong.
Okay. But there may be different ways to get it. We're not quite sure.
Mm. Try Google.
Yeah.
Ian, the next thing in the trouble gusset is actually from you, but I suspect it's not originally from you.
No, it's my problem.
Oh, and that's from one of a big list, I'm sure.
Well, would you like me to read it out?
Rich, coming from me. Why don't you read it out, Ian? Have your little moment of glory.
As I mentioned earlier, I've upgraded my iPad to iOS 6 since the last show. And one of the things that's missing on iOS 6 is the YouTube app. So I can go to youtube.com in Safari to watch videos. But when you click the little thing in the corner of the video to go into full screen mode, it doesn't hide the status bar. So you get a video in full screen mode with the status bar sitting right at the top and kind of ruining the whole full screen effect. I want to know, is there a way to get full screen YouTube video on the iPad? Google have released a YouTube app, but it's only for iPhone. So is there a way to do it for iPad?
Are you going to answer this one, Ian?
No, I have done no research on this since I asked the question.
You know, I've done a little research on this, and I've got the YouTube app for my phone, but I tend to use the iPad for this, and especially for flinging stuff onto the Apple TV. And there are some YouTube apps for the iPad, and they're called like YouViewer and things like that, and they all looked so god awful. I didn't actually try any of them. So I'm not much used to it at this point. I think, really, for the optimal experience, we're going to have to wait for Google. And I never thought I'd hear myself saying that. But no, I'm absolutely stumped. I think we'd be very keen to hear either on Twitter or via
there's
email.
The thing, because I think one of the things that the YouTube app does, if you get it for iPhone, is it will handle YouTube URLs. I think the operating system still delegates that to the YouTube app because it knows that's what you do. So I'm wondering, look, obviously I haven't tried them yet, if any of these other third-party YouTube apps also intercept that URL if you try to view a YouTube thing. Because that's what I want, really. I don't want to, if I go to a YouTube video, I'd quite like to get it to open an app like it used to.
Well, yeah, and me too, but I've not seen anything. I think we might actually have to throw this back to our listeners.
Very well.
Yeah, if anyone has tried one of these slightly shonky looking apps, then do let us know. But I've just been using the web so far, and it's not ideal.
The only thing I can think of is to use the cleaner. The same that is, they do the little Safari extension that cleans
the plugin.
Up YouTube.
I love that plugin, yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. They made an app. I had no idea. I found out the other day.
Okay.
And it's universal. So I assume it would look, at least I hope it will take away the bar at the top when you do videos in full screen.
Well, I'm going to try that checked. Out.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look.
It's cheap. I think it's the bottom tier, so that's about $49.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I certainly love what the cleaner guys or gals have done with the plugin, which cleans up Amazon and is it YouTube and I think a couple of other things as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just gives
I think
you a really kind
doing
of simple
Amazon,
view.
Though.
Oh, okay.
Because they work constantly fighting, because Amazon keeps redesigning all the time, apparently, so they just got fed up.
Oh, Amazon.
Yeah.
Right.
But hey, it makes YouTube usable, so.
Have we got anything else in the.
Sorry, is that Klee.nr?
It is clea.nr, yeah.
Great.
Just looking, there's one more thing rolling around in the bottom of the trouble gusset, and it's from another Ian Wood, who said on Twitter, does anyone know of a way to turn off the offline reading list feature in iOS 6? Not just on mobile data, but completely. He suspects you can't, and I think I suspect you can't either.
I've been really frantically searching around everywhere, as far as I know.
Down the back of the sofa?
I didn't try there. But at least I tried the Apple support forums and all that, and I haven't been able to find anyone who said that you can actually turn it off.
I don't see a thing. You know, I've a few times sent things to the reading list that I didn't mean to. Nothing dodgy. Just, you know, I just find all these things sitting in there and had no recollection of putting them there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I don't really use it because I use Instapaper for all my offline reading.
Mm.
So there might be a little bit of a gap. I don't know if it's... I suppose it's one of these things that for most people, it's just not there if you're not using it, you know? A lot of people don't see it at all, so it's... But I'm sure it's driving Ian Wood mad. If anyone does have any sacred knowledge that we're not party to, please do let us know.
Mm. That would be interesting to know, because it's... Yeah, like you said, it could be an annoyance to some people.
Well, mine is full of guff. Right then, we've moved from guff to something that's really splendid, and that is UK.net. That brilliant link. UK2.
Get the thing right.
I'm going to do it right this time. I know I made a mess of this last time.
Do the link again.
I kind of forgot what the link was now. Shall I sing a little song about UK2? No, right, well, I'll just get on with it. So we'd like to say thank you to our sponsors, UK2, who do all the hosting and help out British Tech Network now for over 3 years. They're highly recommended, and our podcasts and all the others on British Tech Network would not be possible without UK2.net. We've got some voucher codes for discounts on their services. They're all linked to the British Tech Network. If you want to use these discount codes, please do go to our site first, which is britishtechnetwork.com. Click on the link at the left, and that'll let UK2 know that we've sent you through. So, the first code is British Tech DNS, which is free DNS for 2 years. The next one's British Tech Domains, which is 20% off domain registration. The next one is British Tech VPN, which is 50% off of VPN for the first month. British Tech Server gives you £50 off any gigabit server on any contract. That's an online-only discount. And British Tech VPS is first month of a virtual private server free. Some great discounts. UK2 are a great company, and the British Tech Network highly recommend them. My goodness, I sounded almost like Paul Wheatley, didn't I?
You're getting the knack, it's true.
I'm getting the knack, yeah. Well, maybe one of these days I'll nail it. So, just a few little things left in the tail end of this wonderful podcast. Have everyone enthralled, I'm sure. And those are our picks. So myself and our other two iOS enthusiasts always pick the apps that we found in the last... since the last podcast that we've been particularly enamored by. I've actually sort of got two and in a way three, so I'm going to go first because I'm the most important.
Do you want to go second and third as well, or can we get in there at some point?
It's just all about me.
Okay.
All about
me. You are the host, carry on.
I'm the hostest with the leastest. The first one I've got is Crazy Taxi, which is £2.99 on the British App Store. It's for iPhone and iPad, and it's basically a port. My pick last week was a port of a Dreamcast game, which was Choo Choo Rocket, and this one is no exception. Crazy Taxi was on the Dreamcast. It's a great game where you drive around picking up passengers in your crazy taxi and take them to their destinations against some particularly testing timescales. It's great fun. It's a very, very nice port and runs very smoothly on my iPhone. While I was looking for that, because I'd heard it had come out, the first result for Crazy Taxi was a game called Taxi Gone Crazy. And it's basically, if you could imagine somebody playing Crazy Taxi, you know, in 1999 or whenever the Dreamcast came out, having never, ever seen it since then and having a really, really bad memory, and then attempting to build an iOS game through with very few game making skills. It's phenomenal. It has very, very basic graphics and gets absolutely awful reviews. So Crazy Taxi if you love gaming, Taxi Gone Crazy if you have a deep seated loathing of yourself. My other pick for today is NetBot, which is an app.net client from the people who make Tweetbot. I think they're called TapBots, Ian?
They are indeed, Roddy, yes.
They are indeed, okay. So NetBot is an app.net client. It's very, very neat. I tried Tweetbot before on my phone, and I just didn't like it because every time I touched something, an unexpected thing would happen. But I got so into NetBot, I've now started using Tweetbot again as my Twitter client. And after a little bit of persevering and learning what all the different gestures do, it works really well. It's smooth and it's not crashy like the official Twitter client. So that's also £2.99 on that app store. Robert, have you got a pick for us?
I do indeed, and I'm kind of continuing the theme of somewhat old racing games from old consoles. I got Driver, which I found in my like bought app list since, I don't know, a long time ago. It's the driver game from the PlayStation. You drive around in cool old cars in the 1970s and pretend to be the bad guy while you're actually an undercover cop. Runs pretty well on, well, even an iPhone 3G, to be honest.
Cool.
It's actually a surprisingly fun little game, even today.
Is it a faithful port? Because the one thing I remember about Driver on the PlayStation was that the level you had to do at the beginning, like to access the rest of the game, was really hard.
Yeah, like, that was a bit tricky.
I think I had that and I didn't get very far at all. I think I had it on the PC or something.
I think the PC version was even trickier because, well, by definition, you didn't necessarily have a smooth controller like on the PlayStation. Controller,
yeah. Yeah, so,
you
so play is
it
that,
with the keyboard.
Do you not have to do that in this one, or is it completely faithful?
It is completely faithful.
Oh, so it's hard. Okay.
It's hard, yes. But the touch controls work surprisingly well. I was kind of shocked when I tried it out.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, that's, yeah. I'm going to try that out. It looks a good one. Ian, what have you got for us?
This week, Roddy, it's not an app. It's the Humble eBook Bundle. So some of you guys may have come across the Humble Bundle before. It's something that happens quite often, like two or three times a year. A bunch of indie games publishers come together and offer their games for whatever you want to pay. So this time, instead of games, what they're doing is ebooks. Now, the ebooks are DRM-free, which means you can get a version that you can use in iBooks on your iPad, which is the slightly tenuous iOS link. but for whatever you want to pay, you can get 8 ebooks. It's being put on in association with the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America Association. And so the books have a kind of science fiction and fantasy bent to them, but there's some really good books in there. There's one by Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean, one by John Scalzi, one by Cory Doctorow, all of whom are my favorite authors. So I'm definitely going to be buying it, and I commend them to you as well. There'll be a link to them in the show notes.
Go on, read a book.
And anything by Neil Gaiman is good.
Did you say that was free, or do you have to pay actual money for it?
Yeah, pay what you want. You choose how much you want to pay, and you can decide what goes to whom. So it's also done in association with the Child's Play charity. Mm-hmm. So by default, it kind of lets you give some to the authors, some to the charity, and then some to the Humble Bundle organization who put the thing on. And if you don't want to give anything to the authors, you don't have to. If you want to give it all to charity, you can do that. It's entirely up to you. And you know, provided you put some money in, you can pretty much pay what you like.
Cool.
They recommend $25, and that's probably what I'm going to pay.
Extra value.
Indeed, but for 8 books, $25 is pretty good.
Fab. Well, that brings us nicely to the end of another iOS show brought to you by the British Tech Network. My God, I really am starting to sound like Paul Wheatley, haven't I? I'll just let you know how to get in contact with all of us. I am at Roddy at Twitter, but the spelling is R-O-D-T for Tango, I for India. I'm also the same name at app.net. Ian?
I am on Twitter, but not app.net because I'm not cool enough. But I go by Maniac Yak, which is MANIACYAK.
Cool. And Robert?
I am also on Twitter, but still not yet on app.net, and it's at Streak Machine, all in one word.
Fab. And I know we've actually ended up throwing some of our Trouble Gusset stuff back to our audience. So if anyone does have any suggestions for these particularly tricky Trouble Gusset nuggets this week, please do get in touch with us. Our email address is britishtechnews@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions, any feedback, please send it to us there. We would love for you to review us on iTunes. If you are downloading the podcast, only takes a minute to give us a star rating, or even better, give us some nice feedback that we can get stuck into. If you can't be nice, be constructive, is all I've got to say. Once again, it's been a delight casting our pods at you, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
With the return of Mr. Paul Wheatley from his honeymoon. Unless he's been eaten by sharks or something.
Well, we can only hope.
And if he has, then I'm sorry in advance.
All right. Cheers, folks.
Goodbye. Bye.